This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's 6:06 on this Friday morning, October 18th, 2024. 18 days until Election Day. And another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, maybe on the Civic Media app, maybe by podcast, or watching us on YouTube or Facebook. However you do it, thanks for starting your day right here. Got a question for you. How many folks do you think have early voted already in Wisconsin? Well, in person, the number is zero. The early in-person voting starts next week, Tuesday. But in terms of mailing in absentee ballots, it's more than 270,000 already. I'll share that number later when we talk to Kia Vakil coming up a little bit later on this hour. It is not too late for you to also vote absentee if you think for any reason whatsoever. Circumstances might be a little crazy on election day, or you just want to avoid the lines. You just want to get your vote over with. You know who you're voting for, and you want to spend the rest of the time ignoring commercials and persuading other people to vote. Well, go get that absentee ballot. Go to myvote.wi.gov and get more information on how you can absentee vote by mail or in person at your local clerk's office starting next Tuesday. Again, myvote.wi.gov has info on that as well, because those in-person early voting hours are controlled by your local clerk, so they vary. And the MyVote website can get you there to learn more as we head into these final 18 days before Election Day. So while Donald Trump was rambling through an interview answer blaming Ukraine for Russia's invasion, Vice President Kamala Harris yesterday was making stops all around Wisconsin to ask voters to take the country in a more stable direction. Harris was accompanied by billionaire entrepreneur Mark Cuban, who talked about Trump's plan for massive tariffs, called them just gibberish. We'll play a little sound from there coming up for a bit. As mentioned, we'll talk to Kia Vakil more about the week's big stories. And you know how for the past, I don't know, 10 years or so, there are some conservatives who love to throw around slurs like communist and socialist in a way that gives the impression or provides evidence that they don't really know what the word means. But it sounds good, so they just throw it out there. Then there's progressives, on the other hand, who are well aware of how to describe fascism, but they're only recently using the word more publicly, in part because Donald Trump's rhetoric creeps closer to matching it. And we're going to talk to Mark Jacob about news coverage of how even the New York Times yesterday finally ran a story that said, well, here's what fascism is, and here's what Trump's been saying, and here's why people are kind of thinking the two are starting to look like they go hand in hand. You know, it looked that way sooner to some people than others. But still, the F word is starting to get used more frequently. Not the one that always gets used during campaign time. We're well familiar with that one. At the bus stop right now, things are a little warmer than they were a couple days back. It's 51 here on Lake Wissota, 51 in Hayward. Wausau's at 42, La Crosse 50, Wisconsin Rapids at 40 degrees right now, Amory's at 53, Madison's at 43, Waukesha's down to 37, and it's 46 degrees at Mitchell Airport in Milwaukee. And joining us from Waukesha, filling in for Greg Bach, is the one, the only, Luke Mathers, still in the prison cell.
Not Waukesha. I'm down here in Madison.
I'm sorry, Madison. Yes, in A2. You're in, again, the Russian gulag cell known as A2 there.
It's a studio work in progress. And
could you just, I mean, I know
right
you.
Now. It's working right
how
now.
Many, how many beer posters that were hanging up in your dorm room do you still have in a basement box someplace? Bring some of those in. Put
I
those
think
up.
They're rolled up in like a PVC pipe tube in the garage. I think that's where those
please,
are.
Please tell me you didn't save those. No.
I believe there's some college posters somewhere. I'm not that far removed from college, Pat. Come on.
I know, but at some point we let go of our childish things like, you know, beer posters. But
I'm not there yet. I'm still childish enough.
Okay, that's it. Embrace your inner child and have fun.
I refuse to grow old. Consider me Peter Pan.
Hey, it's the Jimmy Buffett song, growing old, not up.
There you go.
That's us. Another person that fits so perfectly in that category is our friend Kristen Lierley, candidate for Congress in Northeast Wisconsin, and spoke at the rally for Vice President Kamala Harris. Ahead of her address, they sent Kristen out to kind of fire up the crowd. Seems to me like, Luke, that was probably a good choice on their part, you think?
Dr. Lierley rarely disappoints.
No. Remember, she's been a cheerleader. She's been a mascot. She's just completely hopelessly effervescent. Alicia is writing in that says the Green Bay stop was awesome. Dr. Lierley gave an awesome speech. Tony just chimed in from Ashland on YouTube. She was amazing at the rally last night. The clip I want to play is the most quintessential Kristen Lierley clip of her going off script, but to get the crowd fired up. Give a listen.
I'm going off script. Everybody's nervous and back right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got this stadium across the street that houses our Green Bay Packers. We own them. They are our team. Our team. And there's this cheer that we do every Sunday and frequently, more frequently than every Sunday. We do it a lot. It goes like this. Say it with me if you know it. I'm going to sing it. Bum, bum, ba, na, na. Hey, that's really good. Okay, let's try something different. That's three syllables, right? I've got another word with three syllables. It's ka-ma-la. You want to try it? All right, let's go. Bum, bum, ba-na-na. Ka-ma-la. Yes, let's go, Green Bay!
Well, there she is giving us some audio that we promised to use for the better part of forever.
I just love the off-script part. Like, just like the always, when there's an acknowledgement of like...
You're so not allowed to do that. All the handlers, the campaign folks, they're just... You could see their eyes get so big, like, oh, no. Except anybody that knew Kristen, they're like, just go with it. She'll be fine. And she was. Yeah. So good for her.
Yeah.
The baseball playoffs are still going on. The Dodgers are getting awfully close to moving on to the World Series against the Mets. They won again last night, and they'll play this afternoon. Mets-Dodgers at 4 o'clock. FS1 has the TV. But I bring it up more for the American League game. In the American League Championship Series, it was it's the Yankees and the Guardians, and it was sure looking like the Yankees were going to, you know, go up big. And then the Guardians, again, I don't follow them closely, but I know that there's a player there as the Guardians were down in the ninth inning. They've got a player named Jonkenzie Noel. Noel being the operative word, as you listen to our friend Brian Anderson from the Brewers, who's also working with TBS. Here he's making the call of Jonkenzie Noel tying the game in the ninth inning. You gotta love a guy whose nickname is Big Christmas, and NBA just going right with it. That was fun. And as Tony mentions, you know, that was a game tying homer in the bottom of the ninth, and then another player, Fry, hit a walk off in the tenth. But I thought, and other people wondered this on Twitter as well, that while we don't speak Spanish, we appreciate it. And who doesn't appreciate a good home run call in Spanish?
Oh, any score call in Spanish.
Any score, yeah,
like
frankly.
Goals, touchdowns, anything. Like the broadcasters for the Spanish broadcast stations just do a superb job.
They do. And so here is that same call of Mr. Noel, as called in Spanish.
Plato, batazo! Profunda! Feliz Navidad!
That's beautiful. I don't have to know. I don't have to know to enjoy it.
Yeah. It's you know the home run was there. You can tell from the excitement how impactful it was to the game.
And that it was John Kenzie Noel.
Yeah.
As they start singing Feliz Navidad. So good for them. During the 3 years that we were living in the Caribbean, and we could not get baseball. There were no MLB. You couldn't get the MLB network. None of the networks that they had down there. The only ESPN was ESPN Deportes. And so I would occasionally catch baseball, but only in Spanish. Did I pick up any of the language? No, I most certainly did not. But did I still enjoy the game nevertheless? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yep. Let's see. Here's our reminder here at 6:16 that you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com for more. And as we look at what Christina Laurie has put together this morning, it includes a story about remembering when the Packers used to play half of their home season schedule at County Stadium. And she mentioned that because this is a gold package game this weekend. No, I don't think it is. I think it's just the division ones that are. I'll have to look that up. Sorry. I know the division games are all gold package games this year, but the story itself is about how the Packers used to play those games at County Stadium. Let's see. There's also an article here called Four Common Phrases That Are Actually Really Offensive and Why. And that was put there because of Indigenous Peoples Day, as we continue to, you know, learn about maybe some expressions like bottom of the totem pole and spirit animal and things like that maybe we should know the history of before we go dropping them into conversation. And then finally, with Vice President Kamala Harris staying at the Pfister Hotel in downtown Milwaukee this week, as just about every VIP does. We note that the Pfister has hosted every U.S. president since William McKinley. Of course, all kinds of other VIPs and, you know, musical artists and you name it. And, of course, to go along with a grand old hotel is a grand old tale about maybe it being haunted. So learn a little bit about what they're saying about the Pfister and its reputation, not just for luxury, but for perhaps the spirits that wander inside. All that and more in our daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Now, when we come back, we're going to hear a little bit from Mark Cuban, the billionaire entrepreneur who spoke at the Kamala Harris rally in La Crosse yesterday. And a bit more about Donald Trump's weird fascination with grown men crying, allegedly, to him. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This by Dolly Parton was one of so many from the late great songwriter Cynthia Weil, who was born this day. That's part of today's history lesson coming up 30 minutes from now here on Up North News Radio. You may be aware that there's going to be a little U.S. Senate debate tonight. Civic Media will broadcast the 2024 Senate debate between Senator Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde. Coverage begins tonight at 6:50. Little 10-minute pregame before the debate begins at 7 o'clock. So before and after the debate, you can catch insight and analysis from the Civic Media team of hosts, reporters, and guests. That's the U.S. Senate debate tonight on Civic Media, presented by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Foundation. So, again, the vice president made three stops in Wisconsin, stayed at the Pfister Hotel night before last, had an event at UWM with some of the students in Milwaukee, then had a big rally at UW La Crosse. I mean, just packed to the gills, and the same could be said at the Rush Center in Green Bay for the evening rally. Again, mostly a traditional stump speech by the vice president. Did make note that every time she lands in Wisconsin and is greeted by Governor Tony Evers, he always says, "Welcome home," because Kamala Harris lived in Madison for a short time when she was around 5 or 6 years old, and her parents worked in and near UW-Madison. But, you know, in her remarks, she continues to describe the stakes that this election brings and notes that former President Donald Trump has been behaving increasingly unstable and unhinged, and that he is seeking unchecked power for himself. And she notes his continued use of saying how much he would like to send the American military against American citizens, and also use the power of government to prevent women from making decisions about their own bodies, and threatens other fundamental freedoms, like the freedom to vote, the freedom to be safe from gun violence, the freedom to breathe clean air, drink clean water, and, as she says, the freedom to love who you love openly and with pride. She had an undercard this time around, not just Kristen Lierley in Green Bay, but Mark Cuban in La Crosse. The billionaire entrepreneur is endorsing her. The Dallas Mavericks owner and Shark Tank star warned attendees about Donald Trump and his economic policies. Because as Mark Cuban admits, he did admire Trump as a businessman some time back, but that was many business failures ago, a failed presidency ago. And now is embracing this economic policy that is centered just on punishing tariffs, where he alone would decide who to punish and by how much, and that it just doesn't work that way. Here's how Mark Cuban described it.
I'm going to give him a little bit of credit. I honestly think that he used to understand how tariffs work. I mean, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, he was a little bit coherent when he talked about trade policy, and he actually made a little bit of sense. But I don't know what happened to him. The way he's been thinking about tariffs and trade now, something's a little bit lost. And now his trade policies, particularly with tariffs, are basically just gibberish. Do you hear what I'm saying? Thank you. Thank you.
And he says that because it is. If you've listened to his answers at recent economic forums, he does not give a clear answer other than to say, if you slap a tariff on something, American jobs come back. That's not true. If you slap a tariff on something, a foreign government pays us money, and we'll have so much money we can take care of health care and child care for everybody. And that's not true. Tariffs raise prices. There is a time and a place for tariffs. Now, trade negotiations are going to be tough, but to just announce ahead of time, to tip your hand and say, we're just bringing the hammer right from the get-go, gives every other nation time to come up with alternative strategies that will simply cut off markets for American manufacturers, American farmers, and jack up prices for American consumers. And so you see why Mark Cuban wanted to get involved with this from an economic standpoint, to warn people. How did he put it? He said that Trump is basically going to be the Grinch who steals next year's Christmas if he gets elected into office, because everything is going to be so much more expensive. Trump, meanwhile, was on a conservative podcast where he blamed Ukrainian's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, for Russia's invasion of his country, because, again, he can't talk about anything involving Ukraine or Russia without sounding exactly like a Putin puppet. And to blame Ukraine for Russia's invasion is simply the latest example of it. But there's another example of something that I want to play, and somebody else caught this. You know, you hear something in a stump speech, and you think, okay, this sounds a little off. I know I've heard this before, but maybe I didn't hear it the right way. Donald Trump likes to, well, everybody who's speaking somewhere likes to localize their remarks and say, well, the last time I was here, blah, 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 blah. Well, what Trump does is he tells this story, but he tells it as if it's a factual story, saying that the last time he was here, this guy came up to him, who a businessman or a manufacturer or whatever, and he was crying and saying, "Thank you, sir. You saved America," or whatever. He tells it like it's true, because he only says, "Here." In fact, somebody compiled them. If all of his stories are true, then 26 different times grown men have come up to him crying in cities across the country. If you go look for it on the internet, it's about a 4.5 minute clip. I'll play the first, 45 seconds or so. Here's what I'm talking about with Trump.
"And my company is now doing very well." And he started to cry. And this guy hasn't cried too much, I will tell you. He said, "You're in Tennessee, and a man came up to me. He owned a big metal company, collects metal and manufactures metal. And he had tears in his eyes, strong guy. You could see he's lifted plenty of steel. But he came up to me and he said, 'Sir, I just want to thank you. You saved my life. You saved—'
The last time I was here, a man came up to me and said, 'Sir, President Obama took our heart away, took our life away.' I'll never forget it. A man, strong guy, had tears in his eyes. He said, 'You gave us back our life.'
He said, 'If you endorse me, I'll win.'"
And there were tears coming down from his eyes. Another guy's come down, tears coming down from his eyes. It happens every place. Luke, I'm concerned that Donald Trump is making so many grown men cry. I mean, it's like the Beatles or something.
I don't know if it's the same man that's just following him at each campaign stop, or exactly, because that was Tennessee, Minnesota. There were several different remarks. We'll link the video to the podcast today.
Sounds perfect. Kia Vakil is coming up next. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
If it's Friday, it's Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom national correspondent, joining us from Los Angeles. Kia, hello. How are you?
Hello, Pat. I'm all right. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm good. Home stretch is in sight somewhere in sight, kind of. Far distant horizon, but it's there.
That's what they keep telling me. I don't know that I believe it yet, but
one day closer. But thanks for joining us to talk about some of the bigger campaign stories of the week here. And let's start with some good news here. In Wisconsin, through Wednesday, I don't have the Thursday numbers yet here, but through Wednesday, 283,000 folks have already returned their absentee ballots. That number is going to really shoot up come Tuesday when in-person early absentee voting begins. But there's still, another like 300,000 absentee ballots out there to be sent in. Georgia, Michigan, maybe other states too, but I know about those two. Their early voting's underway, and folks have noticed.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing really high early voting turnout in the states you just mentioned. Georgia smashed its past record, I think, by like well over double in terms of the number of voters who turned out on the first day. And that's a good thing. I mean, no matter which, political party you are a member of, or if you're not one, a democracy should have turnout and people voting, and voting should be easy and convenient. And that so many people are using early voting is a good sign. There's no reason not to, frankly, in some states, early voting is really accessible. It's slightly less in some others. In some states, mail voting is really accessible. I've got my ballot right here for California. And I'm excited to fill that out this weekend. So yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of enthusiasm, which is great.
Yes, it is. And again, no matter what side of the fence you come down on here, nobody should be trash talking the whole notion of early voting and mail voting. It's all good. It's safe, secure. Cast your ballot however you see fit. Folks might wonder, well, wait, if early in-person absentee voting in Wisconsin starts Tuesday, that's 2 weeks before the election. Didn't we used to have more time for that? And the answer is yes. a couple years ago, Republicans in the legislature shrunk that window to the 2 weeks prior to Election Day, just in case you were wondering about that. All right, we got the good news out of the way. This week will be remembered, I think, as the week when, you know, the knives really came out, the claws were sharpened, whatever analogy you want to use. It just feels like it ramped up this week, which is kind of what I said back on Monday. I said, this week's going to get ugly. And I really think it's lived up to or down to expectations.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the home stretch, you know, we're seeing, you know, things get, like you said, really contentious. We saw, obviously, Kamala Harris did a Fox News interview that was more of a debate with Bret Baier. You know, she held her own, though. We're seeing Donald Trump. He did a Univision town hall the other night. And, you know, at his rallies, he's getting increasingly, you know, irritable and angry, you know, when he's not dancing for 30, 40 minutes. But this is what, you know, this is what was always going to happen. He was always going to lean into his really ugly message towards the end. And that's what he's doing. You know, it's all nativism. It's all xenophobia, blaming immigrants for every single problem in the country. And, you know, attacking Kamala Harris repeatedly with, you know, very personal attacks, which, you know, she has not, for all the things you could critique Trump about, which she does, you know, it doesn't really get personal. But again, the two sides are not the same, are not held to the same standards. And we're really seeing that recently. But, you know, this was to be expected. Elections always start to get really ugly in October. And, you know, especially if there's no October surprise, I think the surprise is just going to be a lot more contentious ads and statements.
So I'm going to have you take off your reporter hat for a moment. Okay. And just put on the hat of somebody who is up to speed on all of this. None of this surprised you this week. Sure. I know you have friends who aren't very politically active. Yeah. And they're going to say, Kia, I mean, this week, this has been, why would I even bother to vote? What would you tell people who are thinking about, you know, feeling discouraged about the whole process?
I would say you should treat voting as one part of your civic duty. I would say, because if you don't engage with the process, you have no real voice in what happens next. And so it's annoying, especially if you live in a swing state like where I come from in Pennsylvania. All you see is ads all the time in September and October and early November of an election year. They're ugly ads. They're anti-trans ads. They're anti-immigrant ads. Even just normal ads are annoying at a certain point. And when it gets ugly, yeah, it's discouraging. You may tune it out. My honest advice is to vote and then just turn off your television for the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Or turn off your television for the next 2 weeks, read a newspaper, read one of our stories at Courier Newsroom, follow your, you know, trusted sources, vote, and then ignore all the noise, because voting is important. But it's, again, it's only one part of what you do. I would encourage you to show up to a town hall in your local community after the election and continue to stay involved and really don't give in to the cynicism and sort of the noise that unfortunately surrounds elections.
I mean, it's noisy, but there are ways to cope with it. And I know DVRs have been around for a while now, but I'm telling you, yeah, every election cycle, I am so thankful for that fast forward button. I watch almost nothing live now. We it's like a running joke with us. If we want to watch something, we will spend 10 minutes just having a nice conversation and feel like we've stored up enough, you know, space for speeding through the commercials, and away we go. Not a great pitch for potential television advertisers, but, you know, that's the way it goes this time of year. I personally think that the more that Donald Trump talks about January 6th being a day of love, like he did at least one of his events this week, and I think he says that in pretty much every speech, but I think as that gets repeated more and more, again, we've said he's not looking to appeal to moderates, but I just feel like there's still enough out there feelings about January 6th that calling it a day of love may be something that political strategists will look back on and say, that's really not a tact you should have taken in the closing 2-3 weeks.
No. And it's just anyone who had any shred of willingness to set their ego aside for a split second would address it differently. Even, you know, you know, people died. It was not a day of love. Hundreds of law enforcement officials were injured. People had to hide in closets. Congressional representatives had to hide in closets to avoid being ruthlessly attacked by the mob that Trump whipped up. That's not a day of love. Everyone might have a different concept of love, but I don't know any person who thinks that is loving. It was a day of violence and threats and screaming, "Hang Mike Pence." And, you know, the whitewashing of it and the reimagining of it in the last couple of years has been kind of jaw-dropping, if unsurprising. The next day, I knew this would happen after January 6th because the party was transformed by that point. They were never going to hold Trump accountable, you know, and we saw the handful of Republicans who spoke out against him, Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney, have either left Congress or are leaving. And it's a shame because, you know, he should have been held accountable. And by continuing to refer to it as a day of love, it's really, it's just another attack on our democracy, even if it's rhetorical.
And it has influenced a lot of people. Vice President Harris had an event this week with about 100 different Republicans, a Republicans for Harris event, retired members of Congress and other officials. And again, that was one particular event, but it again gave people permission to say, you don't have to vote the way you historically do because this year things are a little bit different.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, again, I'm not a Republican, but I grew up around a lot of Republicans in Montgomery County and Bucks County in Pennsylvania, which are two of the key counties around Philadelphia. And those districts are now lean blue, those counties, because we've seen a lot of those sort of, you know, early 2000s Republicans pre-Trump now become more up for grabs because they find what he's doing pretty appalling. And, you know, it is smart of the Harris campaign or any Democratic campaign to go after them. And, you know, the key is to, again, build support from Republicans and build a popular front, so to speak, of support, because that's really the only way to beat a fascist. And Donald Trump is a fascist. We saw Mark Milley, his own former joint chiefs of staff. I might be getting his title wrong, but he straight up called Trump a fascist. And you have to build as broad a base of popular support as you can to beat someone like that.
And by the way, an hour from now, we'll have Mark Jacob on, and I'm probably going to start the conversation with an article that I saw online Thursday at the New York Times that finally, in my view, breaks down what fascism is. And as you look at all the various components, it's like, yeah, that's Trump, you know, but people have always been hesitant to use the word until recently. And General Milley is part of the reason for that. Let's turn toward another area here, and we're not going to have time to go through all the states here, and I don't expect that you've got everything there, but I do know that in Texas, in the U.S. Senate race there, if I'm not saying that Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde won't, you know, throw some rhetorical punches tonight, I'm sure they will, but they do things a little bigger in Texas, and Ted Cruz was, in my estimation anyway, on the ropes quite a bit against his Democratic challenger this week. Is Ted Cruz in danger?
Ted Cruz might be in danger. He is as unlikable and unpopular a Republican senator as, you know, as exists anywhere in the country. He almost lost in 2018 to, you know, Beto O'Rourke, lost by 2.5 points or won by 2.5 points roughly. Which, you know, is an underperformance in Texas. Texas is, you know, perpetually trending purple and blue, but it still, you know, leans red. Statewide, a Democrat hasn't won in Texas in 30 years. And, you know, do I think Ted Cruz might break that streak? It's quite possible. We saw in the debate with Colin Allred, his Democratic opponent, former NFL player, you know, Allred really took the fight to him. And, you know, he's run a sort of under the radar campaign relative to what Beto did the last cycle in 2018. But sometimes under the radar is honestly as effective. So we don't know. We won't know till election day. You know, I wouldn't put my money on Ted Cruz losing, unfortunately, but it would be unambiguously a good thing for America. You know, I think even if you went and asked Ted Cruz's, you know, fellow Republican senators, if you told them we'll give you Republican control of the Senate, but Ted Cruz will lose, they would take that 100 times out of 100 times.
Yes. So yes, they would. Yeah.
We'll see. But you know, it's going to be close.
They would throw a farewell party. It would just be a short one. I have to ask you to do me a favor to try to translate JD Vance for me, because he finally, you know, stopped waffling and said, no, he doesn't think that Trump lost in 2020. He said big tech stole the election. Can you explain what we think he means by that so that we can lead to what actually did happen in 2020?
Okay. Well, first things, JD Vance is the dumbest smart person I've ever encountered in politics.
Go Yale. Yep.
Because he is clearly an intelligent human being. Just he's, you know, not even the education. Like he actually has interests in policy. I find them to be abhorrent policies, but he is not a stupid human, which makes it all the more offensive when he says something that just unbelievably, unambiguously ridiculous. I would guess he means something about Hunter Biden's laptop, but I don't know. I am very content in my life not being a JD Vance translator, because there are too many good things in this world to waste time trying to interpret what that fool thinks. You know, again, I'm willing to entertain most things, but the 2020 election was not stolen. Donald Trump lost. Get over it and admit a loss.
And yeah, if you're when he started babbling on with the New York Times reporter about Hunter Biden's laptop, and I think it was Google was not, you know, was suppressing information about it, et cetera, et cetera. In my mind, if you're going to talk big tech and a role in presidential elections, let's go back and break down Cambridge Analytica and Facebook in 2016 first, because I don't feel like we have done more than scratch the surface on that one. But it's all academic at this point. Our elections are free, they are fair, they are accurate. And the sooner that people like J.D. Vance can stop getting away with this kind of rhetoric, the better off we all will be. Kia Vakil, thank you so much. Just a couple weeks to go. Hope you have a restful weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. You too.
All right, we've got our history lesson ahead. Still Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, and more. This is Up North News Radio from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Chuck Berry, rock and roll pioneer, was born 98 years ago today, this day in 1926, passed away in 2017. On today's calendar, on this day in 1867, the United States took possession of Alaska after purchasing it from Russia for about $7 million, and so it's celebrated annually in the state as Alaska Day, where you can... I was going to do the Sarah Palin. I can see my house from there. In 1898, I did a much better impression, Luke, the other day of Eric Hovde. I was very happy with that impression. My Sarah Palin one, it's a little rusty. Haven't used that for a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine that one's been kind of at the back of the closet. You haven't had to break it out.
I'm just saying that if there's any audio problems during the debate tonight with Tammy Baldwin, just call on me. I can feel ready. Like, she doesn't even know what she's talking about. So, you know, I'll be ready. Where was I? Oh, yes. The United States took possession of Puerto Rico from Spain on this day in 1898. And the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, was founded on this day in London in 1922. So happy 102nd birthday to the BBC. As mentioned a little earlier, this is the anniversary of the birth of infamous songwriter Cynthia Weil. She and her husband had a friendship and a rivalry with another husband and wife songwriting duo, Carole King and Jerry Goffin. So Cynthia Weil and her husband Barry Mann wrote On Broadway Here for George Benson, You've Lost That Love and Feeling,
by the Righteous Brothers. You're My Soul and Inspiration by the Righteous Brothers. We Got to Get Out of This Place by the Animals. Don't Know Much by Aaron Neville and Linda Ronstadt. We played Here You Come Again by Dolly Parton. Wrote hits for James Ingram, Cass Elliott, Lionel Richie, and so much more. And she died last year at the age of 82, but was born this day in 1940. And then another one of the great female songwriters of our time, Laura Nyro, whose compositions included several songs for the Fifth Dimension, was born this day in 1947. Fifth Dimension also did one of her songs, Wedding Bell Blues. She wrote Stony End for Barbara Streisand. For Blood, Sweat, and Tears, she did Eli's Coming and When I Die. She died of cancer in 1997 at the age of 49. She was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2012. Some birthdays today. Mike Ditka is 85 years old today. And Ne-Yo is 45 today. Jazz trumpeter Wynton Marsalis is 63 years old today. Retired skiing legend Lindsey Vonn turns 40 today. And actor Zac Efron is 37. It is hard to remember a time when Adele wasn't a ridiculously famous superstar. Might even admit Luke is so young, he might not even remember a time when Adele wasn't a superstar. Can you confirm or deny that there was a time when you didn't know who Adele was? Or she's just been omnipresent in your life?
No, yeah, like I remember when she first got big. So like okay. I was young.
Well, that's because it was this day in 2008 when you were practically a zygote. Adele was the musical guest on Saturday Night Live. She did two songs, including her first big hit at the time. I got to say, I heard this first hit, and I'm like, it didn't do anything for me, like Chasing Pavements, what? But then came hit after hit after hit after hit. As for this Saturday Night Live appearance in 2008, the other appearance on the show was by Alaska's own Sarah Palin. And that's what led to a huge audience and lots of exposure for Adele, which gave her a big boost in America after seeing some success in her native United Kingdom. So we mentioned it is Alaska Day today. Today is a day to salute healthcare aides, everybody who helps out with healthcare and those providers. This is World Menopause Day, and this is World Mammography Day. This is National Necktie Day, and it's National No Beard Day. In other words, everything Luke Mathers is not.
I completely missed the mark on this one. Sorry.
When was the last time you wore a tie?
I didn't wear one at the wedding.
Oh, you did get married long ago.
Yeah, probably the wedding, yeah. Last August.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I may have worn a tie. Yeah, I don't know if I've worn any ties since then.
Did you describe that tie as your marrying and burying tie because you're not going to wear another one again until they bury you, or?
No. Oh, okay. It's just the weddings that I've attended since were all casual. So I wore like a suit.
Really?
Yeah, I wore a suit. Well, not formal, like super formal, like semi-formal kind of vibes. Right. So like I wore a suit with a nice shirt, but that's all I wore.
Guys, you're getting married, okay? This not for you, Luke. This is for all the other
guys. You don't want to show up the groom, though, too. That's the hardest part going to a wedding sometimes. You don't want to look
better.
Oh, that's
been a real danger for you and me, is that we're going to show up the groom. This is why we're in Radio Mathers. This is also National Mashed Potato Day. I think the food, not the dance, because nobody's that old enough to remember the dance. And this is National Chocolate Cupcake Day. And again, I'm sorry that I forgot to bring some in to share, Luke, but you know, there's still time for us to make them later on.
That's the best part about this being the morning. We can go celebrate these days. We haven't missed them fully yet.
No, we've now we can take a cue for what we're going to enjoy for the rest of the day. Let me tell you what we're going to enjoy in the next hour. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be here, along with Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher, plus Brittany Merlot's forecast on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.